This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. 2020 is a huge year for many kinds of voters. It's such a contested race at the top of the ticket. Our state politics reporter Rick Pluta has been going around saying, show me a voting block in Michigan that doesn't matter. However, this is a particularly big year for younger voters coming of age. And it so happens that no demographic in the U.S. has more young voters right now than Latinx Americans, a cohort that's helping reshape an already important piece of the electorate. Joining us now to talk more about how Latinx voters in Michigan are feeling this election day is Sergio Sierra Reyes. He's a community organizer in and around Grand Rapids. And Angela Ocampo is with us as well. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Michigan. Sergio, Angela, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you, April.
Angela Ocampo, what do we know about eligible Latinx voters in Michigan, where they live, and maybe what their lives are like?
Yeah, so we know that they predominantly care about a variety of different issues. I think speaking to what Sergio was saying, we know that while immigration reform is a big issue for them, that they're also really concerned about the handling of the pandemic. They're also really worried about the economy and cost of healthcare. We know that the Michigan voters in Michigan are different from those in a lot of other states. They tend to be, on average, more English dominant than in other parts of the country. And they also tend to be more along the lines of Mexican and Puerto Rican origin, Mexican origin dominating this particular population.
Sergio, what are you finding just in your unscientific explorations of how outreach has been happening? Do you feel like you're seeing much, if any, being done with Spanish language outreach?
Yes, there has been quite a lot, actually, here with the Urban Core Collective, my organization that I work with. My colleagues have been doing a lot of Spanish engagement, and then organizations like the Latina Network and the Latino Network here in Grand Rapids, the Latino Community Coalition, the Hispanic Center, the Hispanic Chamber, they've been engaging with voters in Spanish and kind of bridging that gap. We're actually sending people to volunteer at the polls to translate in Spanish. And actually, people have taken time off and not leaving any possible barriers to chance. So actually working the polls, volunteering at the polls, something that I think has been unprecedented here in West Michigan. So it's been happening here.
Yeah. The Latinx community has been one of the hardest hit by COVID, and there are a lot of people who are essential workers and business owners in the community. Sergio, what was your observation of whether COVID relief was available for the people who really needed it most?
So initially, here for about 4 or 5 months, the Latinx community was, in Kent County at least, was 40% of the positive test results for COVID, even though we make up about 17%. And especially with the undocumented community, there was no assistance for them. So that was quite a challenge for us. The same organizations that we mentioned, along with Movimiento Cosecha and other organizations here, the local community foundation, created a fund called La Lucha specifically for immigrants that do not qualify for other benefits. So that was quite a challenge. And then businesses were really hurting. Latino businesses were really struggling to stay open. Some of them I know have closed permanently. And so that was quite a challenge getting that assistance to our Latinx communities in multiple fields. People are still scared. People are still, like, even as I talked to people over the weekend, they were talking a lot about COVID being one of their priorities, along with healthcare as a priority for the election. What we've seen in anecdotal and with some data to back it up, I think people, especially in the Latinx community, realize that it's such an important issue to for them to have access to healthcare at a time when we don't know when or whether we're going to get COVID or not. I think that's something that emerged with the pandemic.
Yeah. Angela, if there's anything that we've learned in the past 20 years or so, I think it's that Latinx voters are not a monolithic group. And there are certainly places in the Southwest and in Florida where there's a pretty substantial Latinx population that votes Republican. Is that a trend we see much of here in Michigan?
Yeah, so not necessarily. And it is true that, you know, we know that the Latinx community is not a monolith, but we're not necessarily seeing that here in Michigan. Latinx voters tend to be more Republican. If anything, they tend to be much more Democrat than in other parts of the country. And part of this can be due to the fact that, you know, they come from certain national origins, but also their experiences, particularly within the state, you know, can factor into that as well.
Right. So I wanted to ask, you know, we've talked a little bit about just the get out the vote effort, but what have each of you seen from the major parties this year in terms of their outreach? Is this, you know, how is this compared with maybe other big presidential election years that you've had a chance to observe? Sergio?
I would say that the Democratic Party has been reaching out to more Latinos than I've seen in the past. At least Joe Biden has seen more ads with him with commercials specific to the Latinx community. And when I go on YouTube or other like social media platforms, I see a lot of Trump. However, I see the ads, but they're not targeted to me or targeted to the Latinx community. What I have seen are multiple organizations that are just sending in funds to organize and many groups hiring to get out the vote, not necessarily with the Democratic Party, but I think people that are motivated by, you know, ensuring that we win this election.
I think we have seen that this time around, the presidential campaigns have done, and in particular, the Democratic Party has done a better job of reaching out to the Latinx community. And so we know that in 2016, Clinton only advertised in Spanish and four states. And this time around, the Biden campaign is really advertising not only in Spanish TV, but in Spanish radio. Also, again, as I mentioned, bilingual to the Latinx community in a variety of states. I think it's across 13 states, including Michigan, right? And I think this is something that did not happen in 2016. At the same time, I think it's really important to emphasize that based on recent data that we've collected and that we've seen, that particularly has oversampled Latinx voters, we know that there's still a big share of Latinx voters who are registered who report that they still have not been contacted by the party, right? And this is a sizable share. There's a variation in like what the share is, but it's still there. So I think it signals that while there has been improvement, there's still a lot more ground to cover in terms of mobilizing the community.
Angela, I've seen those numbers too, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, there were years when the Republican Party was sending George W. Bush's nephew on the road to give speeches talking about his Uncle Jorge and mm-hmm. what he was going to do for the party. I mean, I think despite the fact that Donald Trump has sometimes spoken really disparagingly, for example, about Mexicans and Mexican Americans, that the, you know, that residents living in the U.S. are drug dealers and criminals and rapists. Mm-hmm. You know, there is at least a stated interest in Latinx voters who would be willing to vote Republican. What do you make of just the lack of contact to voters who might be making a difference?
Part of this lack of contact, you know, sort of stems from the priorities that campaigns have in mind, right? So I think they have limited resources and they need to focus their efforts on these high propensity voters that they really want to get out the vote and oftentimes do not necessarily try to invest in some of these blocks of voters or communities that are harder to mobilize and that actually need to be double mobilized, right? And that need to be, you know, register first and then contacted and reminded that they need to go out and vote, right? So I think, you know, strategically, probably campaigns are kind of taking a narrow view on this, right? And they're, you know, maybe thinking we're going to try to mobilize this particular community or this particular group of voters that doesn't need as much contact and as much mobilization as other groups. But, you know, in hindsight, right, like, I mean, if you really think about it, that's kind of a short-term strategy. Because once you bring certain groups of voters like new immigrant groups into the fold. And once they're already registered, we know, right, that research tells us that once they're registered, they're much more likely to participate and to engage, right? And so we can overcome some of those turnout deficits by getting people registered to begin with. that's just not necessarily the priority of a lot of political campaigns.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Angela Ocampo, assistant professor in the political science department at the University of Michigan, and Sergio Sierra Reyes, who's a community organizer in and around Grand Rapids. Sergio, if I can turn back to you, as I noted at the when we started talking, there are an awful lot of younger voters out there. How many people do you think you've run into or seen on your social feeds who might be voting for the first time this year?
It's been a surprising number of people. My son, actually, he's going to be a first-time voter this year, and I've been like reminding him constantly. And so he's going to be voting this time for the first time. And then there's friends that I didn't know hadn't voted before, or friends that I didn't know that didn't know they could vote. It's been really interesting to and kind of inspiring to see how many new voters are active and so many questions. I've gotten, like, never before this election, gotten so many people contacting me when they were getting ready to vote, asking me who I was voting for. And so that was, it's encouraging to say the least.
What do you think they make of the last 4 years?
So from what I've been hearing is like the last 4 years activated them. They said, I've seen it firsthand. I no longer have the privilege to not vote. I think they've seen how the current administration has impacted their personal lives, lives of their loved ones. And I think they're ready. They've, you know, seeing their friends put in all this effort is really mobilizing them.
Yeah. The separation of children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border has been happening, and we still have many families who have not been reunited. I wanted to ask both of you, perhaps Sergio first, how much is immigration a defining issue for Latinx voters that you've talked to?
This has been a very sensitive issue for everyone. For me personally, on family members that are undocumented, and with my work with Movimiento Cosecha, we're seeking dignity, respect, and permanent protection for the 11 million undocumented immigrants living in Grand Rapids in the United States. In Michigan, we're fighting for licenses for all. And I think that this, not just the usual immigration that's happening, but how this administration is going after even permanent residents and citizens, and how they're seeing what's happening at the border. I think it's something that there was some level of detachment for, you know, second generation or third generation immigrant that was completely like removed. We see our relatives, our friends, just how this has been impacting us and how it's been progressively getting worse. And just the rhetoric that we hear and how it we see it energize other people against us. It's just, I think the fear has been rising.
Angela, do you see any variation among people's political views based on the variation in residency and citizenship? As, you know, Sergio mentioned, there are many families in which members of one immediate family may have very different statuses from person to person, and some families where the question has been settled for a generation or two. Do you think that there's a substantial difference in how people view the issue based on that?
Yeah, so we actually know and we find that across generation and across residency and also documentation status, right, the issue of immigration is incredibly important. And we don't find a lot of differences, right? And part of this is because this issue, regardless of how far removed from the immigration experience Latinx people might be, they still consider it an important issue, right? They can still, in many ways, identify with the issue because they know someone in their close family or friend circle who is an undocumented person. And so the idea of immigration is not far removed from them, even if they might be second or third generation. And this shapes, right, the way in which right now Latinos view so many of the different dimensions of the issue of immigration, including the child separation, including the incarceration of these children, right, at the border and the border facilities, that, as Sergio mentioned, the sterilization of women detainees, and so on and so forth. And so we actually don't find much of a difference across generation or residency status.
You know, I think there are a lot of voters in other demographics, certainly white voters, and probably we could say this about a lot of Black voters that we've spoken with in Michigan, too. When you ask them how they're feeling about the year, I mean, the word is just shook. Maybe it's Black Lives Matter. Maybe it's the pandemic. Maybe it's the fact that they've been out of work since March or April. But there's just this feeling of turmoil and having endured a lot this year. And this simultaneous, we've heard many times from people about a simultaneous sense of relief that Election Day is almost here, and also a sense of dread. What is your read on how folks in your networks are feeling about this moment right now with everything that 2020 has brought behind them? Angela, would you go first?
Yeah, so sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think people are exhausted in so many ways. People are feeling a lot of anxiety for what's to come, right? And I think a lot of people have been trying to mentally prepare their families, right? Thinking about, you know, we may not know the outcome of the election on Tuesday. And so we have to really think about how to deal with those things. I think, you know, people are just kind of hoping that the year ends, but also worried that they're saying these things, okay, like, let's wait for the year to end, because who knows, right? The year's not over. Who knows what November and December might bring, right? Given everything that we've sort of lived through all these months. So I think, you know, the pandemic is still going to dominate people's lives in so many ways, because cases are rising, because, you know, we're entering the winter season. And I think depending on the outcome of the election, this might bring people some peace of mind. And it might, depending on who wins, right? But it might also exacerbate a lot of the anxiety and the exhaustion that we're seeing people under right now.
Sergio, how about you? What's your read on this?
Yeah, I took a deep breath as Angela was finishing up. I think people feel a lot of anxiety, but I personally, I feel a sense of, like, a deep sense of pride in seeing all the work that, like, my friends and colleagues at the Urban Core Collective, like Latino Network, at the Hispanic Center, like all these organizations that the NAACP that have been working so hard, like never before. I've never seen this happen before. Just people in general on my feed, volunteering, asking how they can help. It's been challenging. And I think it's people are planning. People are planning on how they're going to do self-care on Tuesday and the days following that. And I think that a lot is riding on this election for so many of us in a very, very real way.
Sergio Sierra Reyes is a community organizer. He's coming to us from his home in the Grand Rapids area. And Angela Ocampo is a University of Michigan assistant professor in the Department of Political Science. Angela, Sergio, thanks so much for your time today. We hope you have a safe week.
Thank you, April.
Thank you.